Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees. Well, our heat wave finally broke this week, and we're actually experiencing almost fall-like weather. I may not be ready, but most cyclists here are grateful for cooler weather, sunny skies, and fewer headwinds. Downtown Cleveland has been a hotbed of activity since the senior games came to town last week. From badminton and basketball to horseshoes, softball, track and field, and tennis, and of course cycling, hundreds of top-level senior athletes have come from all over the country to compete. This evening, we are fortunate to have with us in the studio a gold medalist in the women's time trial, among other cycling disciplines. Jane Geis, who is from right here in Northeast Ohio, is a multiple gold medal winner, but oh so much more. I met Jane many years ago when she decided she wanted to taper her equestrian work and focus on cycling a bit more. Well, that bit more became her passion, and she has become one formidable rider and competitor. Jane will be with me shortly to speak about her training, her racing, and her gold medals. After I speak with Jane, I'm going to take a short break and then come back with this week's news and a conversation about bicycles and trains. You might remember a news item from my June 29th show about bikes on Amtrak trains that was written by Streets blog journalist Angie Schmidt. Well, there have been a few more developments, and this week, Ginny Sullivan, the director of travel initiatives at Adventure Cycling, wrote a guest blog on the League of American Bicyclists site that tells about some breakthroughs that are occurring between cyclists and Amtrak. Ginny will tell us about these developments, including the press conference that was held by several key legislators from Washington. Wanting to make sure I got the entire story, we'll also talk with Cliff Cole, who is the communications director with Amtrak from the New York City office. So without further delay, let me introduce you to gold medalist Jane Geis. Jane, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Congratulations.
Oh, Diane, I'm so excited to be here. I've listened to you for so long and imagined what this is like, so this is a hoot.
You like the studio?
I love it.
Yeah, me too. It's a great place.
Very cool.
And we've known each other a long time.
A long time.
And I've watched you go from being a casual cyclist mm-hmm. to being a rabid mm-hmm. cyclist.
And you're partly to blame.
No, I'm not to blame. This is all you. And you're also an amazing competitor. You come from an equestrian background, so... Remind me, when did you switch from horses to bicycles, and how did that transition work?
Okay. Well, originally I started cycling to get fit for mountaineering. Did Mount Blanc, did Rainier two times, and then met Chris Sachs. And of course, it was all over after that.
Yes, it was.
And started riding for the Lymphoma and Leukemia Society. And I did that for 6 years, raising money. And the last time we went, we did the tour to Tucson. And along with us were a bunch of buff, young triathletes, and I kicked their asses on the ride. So I thought, well, maybe I can do this.
Maybe so.
Maybe I should, at age 54, take up a new sport. And the rest is history.
It is history, and it's a really interesting history. So now you are how old?
I'll be 60 in September, so my racing age is 60.
It's considered 60?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk a little bit about training first, because okay. I know you went out and hired a coach.
Yep.
You built a beautiful bike. We built
yep.
you a Calfee, and we built you a 7.
You did.
And you have a time trial bike,
yep.
and you have a cross bike,
I
and
do.
You are hooked. So tell us a little bit about your training, what you do, you know, how you came to this point, which is super, super high competition.
Well, I think the first thing I did that was correct thing to do was hire a coach. I knew that I had knew nothing about this as a competitive sport, and if I was going to do it, I needed to do it correctly at my age. And, I mean, to stumble across Brent Evans was the best possible thing that could have happened to me. So, you know, to get hooked up with a really, really good coach and learn biking techniques and racing strategy. And, you know, he would set up training sessions for me over the computer, and we would talk, and we would meet once a year in January, map out the A races, the B races, and then he would set up my schedule for me to peak accordingly. And then my other workouts would be, you know, improving on skills like sprinting or time trialing, hill climbing, And so early season, I probably ride 2 to 3 hours a day, 6 days a week. Right now, I'm racing so much that I'm just racing pretty much.
So that's an interesting point. In the age group you're in, there are a lot of races, evidently.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And give me an idea of numbers. How many people do you compete against in any specific race? Now, we'll talk about the senior games in a little bit.
Right.
But on the average, how many women are actually racing with you?
Well, I race mostly Cat 1, 2, 3 open age racing.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I'm mostly with kids much younger than me. And we the number of racers now that we have has tripled in the last couple of years. So I'm seeing races with 25 to 40 women.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I do know that women's cycling is not
exploding.
It is exploding. Mm-hmm. It is exploding. And in fact, you know, you are part of a series I'm doing of women in mm-hmm. in cycling right mm-hmm. now. So you're the number three. And the only reason I put you at three is because of the senior games. You could have been number one. Anyway, so how many races do you actually do a year?
I did 45 last summer.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
All right. So here's a weird question. How many of them did you win or place?
I would say all of them.
Atta girl.
All of them.
It's my girl.
I mean, I was certainly in the top 10 every single time, and usually in the top 5.
Oh, you're doing open and Cat 1, too. Is there mm-hmm. money in any of these races?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So maybe now you're starting to get some of this equipment paid for.
I got $125 in my last Masters race criterium.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then I know that as you get involved in things, we can go look back on your equestrian career because mm-hmm. you did a lot of work mm-hmm. with equestrians. Are you seeing sponsorship coming into the events for
you know,
women?
Yes, it's improving. It's definitely improving. And we have a few people out there who are really pushing to do a good job to support the women's racing. More and more now we're getting women's Cat 1, 2, 3, and then 4 races being separated out so that we don't have everybody mushed into the same group.
Right.
Or we're getting more age group options. So it is expanding and we're seeing more and more people in each of those ages. Cat 4 this year has absolutely taken off. Huge number in Cat 4 races now.
That's amazing.
And really good riders. I mean, good, talented young riders coming up. You know, it's amazing. They're just sort of falling out of the woodwork.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's awesome. So can you think back to when you first started racing? What were your biggest fears?
Oh, my gosh. First of all, not humiliating myself to death and being dropped. Getting dropped in a race is really hard. I mean, I would kill myself not to get dropped, and I still got dropped. And just getting to the races. I mean, I didn't know a single soul. I was traveling all over the place, staying in hotels by myself, and arriving at races where I didn't know anybody, and I really didn't know what I was doing. And that's where, you know, Brent was so helpful because
yes.
he would check up on me and say, you know, do a little hand-holding, which is really important as a coach.
Right.
And then as you got to know the women, they were incredibly supportive. It was wonderful.
Wow. I'm talking to gold medalist and a senior Olympic gold medalist, mm-hmm. Jane Geis. She has been a longtime friend of mine, and I am thrilled to be able to introduce her to our listeners. Let's talk about some of the championships. Mm-hmm. So we just watched the Tour de France, and we watched these guys standing on podiums.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like to stand up on the podium?
It's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet, I have to say. But, you know, sometimes it has less to do with a podium than how you rode the race. I did Masters last week, and I won my age group, but I also finished fourth overall. And that was more satisfying to me, to finish fourth overall in all the age groups, than to actually win my age group.
Right.
So, you know, when you're 60 and you're still able to do that with 30-year-olds, that's what feels great.
Yeah, but we know that 60's the new 35.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's evidently how it's going.
Yeah.
So if you could start to give advice to somebody maybe who wants to start racing at the age of even in her 20s, 30s, 40s, mm-hmm. 50s, mm-hmm. what would you say?
Oh, do it. Have fun and do it. Absolutely. And, you know, finding a coach is always really, really helpful. Finding a team that's a starter team that takes in new riders, Cat 4 riders, Cat 5 riders. I ride for Spin Litzer Automation, and we have offered criterium clinics to women, and they love it. They come out and they're trained and taught by other women, and they get to practice cornering, and they get to practice skills. And that's been really successful, and people have had a good time with that.
That's good to hear. Mm-hmm. That's good to hear. How about traveling? So it's not cheap. This is not a cheap sport.
No.
And so do you find that you can travel with other people? Or are you always on your own? You know, how does that work out?
Up until this year, I've been doing it. Well, I've traveled quite a bit with Brent.
Okay.
We went to Cyclocross Nationals and Worlds last year, and we've been to a bunch of races together. But I have a new teammate this year on Team Spin, and she and I have traveled quite a bit together, and she is coming with me to Nationals out in Bend.
And who is that?
This is Laura Webb.
Okay, that's a name I don't know.
Yeah, she's a professional photographer.
Nice.
And she's an up-and-coming. She's in her 30s, and she's a really talented rider, and she's going to go far. It's really exciting to watch her.
So how long do you think you're going to continue racing?
I don't know.
How long would you like to see yourself racing?
That's a really, really good question. I'm sort of on a cusp right now. I mean, I'm still in the mix there with the younger girls, but I'm starting to see a shift this year, and especially as these Cat 4s come in. So I'm going to have to decide whether it's okay for me just to be, you know, pack fodder, or if I'm going to be really upset about that and really miss winning. But there are more Masters races coming along, so I really can't answer that question right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it is obviously one you're thinking about.
Yes, yes, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
And really, I also really enjoy the coaching part.
And that was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Mentoring young riders coming up.
That would be fabulous.
Yeah.
That would be fabulous. And it's just a really fun thing to do, and I love encouraging women. And it's great when they can have another woman to talk to, because they have different kinds of fears than men, and they need different kinds of encouragement than men. And I really enjoy doing that. So we'll see what happens with that.
So do you see yourself actually taking somebody under your wing next year? Do you have that? Is like Laura one of those people you might work with?
I have worked with Laura. Yeah. I mean, it's not official. I just,
yeah,
as teammates, we talk and, you know, whatnot. I'm not sure about that either. So I'm just waiting to see how this all evolves.
I see. Well, I kind of see your daughter getting involved, too.
She talks about
it. Yeah, I know she does. She's, you know, horses, bikes, horses, bikes,
yeah.
You know. She's right on the cusp, too. So let's talk a little bit about the senior games.
Okay.
We've known about them coming to town for a long time. It's very cool that they're here in Cleveland.
Very.
Very. So tell us what events you are participating in. Now, you've already done the time trials.
Two time trials.
And?
I did the 10K time trial yesterday and the 5K time trial today.
And the results?
Gold yesterday, silver today.
That's my girl. And then what's coming up?
Road race Saturday and Sunday.
And where are the road races?
Down on the Shoreway.
Oh, my goodness. They're actually closing the Shoreway
for
the road races?
Well, we're going off at 7:30, so Sunday morning. But they are closing them, yes.
And what's the length of the road race?
40K is the first one on Saturday, and then 20K is the second. On Sunday.
So they're actually doing a 40K women's race. That's cool. How many competitors?
I've got 20 in my 5 years age band.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Now, are all the women going to go at the same time?
They will stagger the starts.
Okay.
Yeah, so that everybody's racing within their own age group. But I'm sure what will happen is you'll get some mixing, you know, as riders overlap different age groups. Right. And we're not allowed to ride with a separate age group. We have to pass on the left and get clear of them, but there will be some mixing.
And who's doing all the timing for these events?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It's not USA Cycling.
These are sanctioned events.
I would think. I really don't know the answer to that.
So let's talk a little bit about the future. Do you have goals for 2014 now ready?
I think what I'd like to get more involved with, as I mentioned, is more coaching and mentoring.
Okay.
I think that's the big one. You know, I'll be racing for sure. And, you know, I would like to see myself be strong in the spring and do really well in some of the 1, 2, 3. I've catted up. I'm a Cat 2 now. So
big surprise. Well, you're going to do cross this fall.
I'll do cross this fall.
Yeah. Did you fall in love with cyclocross?
Oh, my gosh. What a ride. Anywhere where you can wear, anytime you can wear costumes when you ride a bike.
Wait, I thought everybody wore costumes, you know, Lycra costumes.
Well, no, this is like so much fun, you know, and I'm really a huge chicken. It's hysterical because I'm so used to being on a road bike. I simply cannot believe that these bikes can do what they can do.
What do they do?
Well, I mean, the off camber and the mud and downhill through streams and then jumping over barrier. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Tough mudder.
Oh, the mud is unreal.
Who's putting on cross?
There's a Northeastern Ohio cyclocross.
How about the track, Jane?
Haven't been there yet.
You know we have one.
I know we do, but I'm thinking anything that doesn't have brakes, I'm just not so sure about that.
Oh, and the last thing you want to do is put the brakes on when you're on the track.
Well, and then, you know, if I did fall in love with it, of course, that would mean yet another bicycle. So,
well, the last thing I want to do is have you tell your favorite story. Now, there is one about you going to the state championships. Mm-hmm. That I love, but you got to keep it kind of clean.
Okay, well, I have two stories to tell.
Okay.
I'll tell that one first.
Okay.
I was supposed to go off to the Senior Olympics in 2011, and United Airlines completely messed up my tickets.
Oh, and, I remember this.
Yeah, they wanted to double charge me and triple charge me for my tickets at the last minute, and I just decided they were not going to hijack me, and I wasn't going to pay it, so I didn't go. So I was really ripped. I was, you know,
yes, I know.
Just beside myself. So I go down to this Masters race. I can't remember where it was.
It was near Columbus.
It was the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, right.
And it was a Masters race, so they lined everybody up according to age, and I was lined up in front with all the young group because I usually race with them. And the referee goes, "Where's Jane Geis?" And I raised my hand, and he says, "You come back here and ride back here with this group here. They're doing one lap." I looked at him and I said, I did not, beepity beep, drive 3.5 hours down here to ride one lap. And he just looked at me and his eyes got really big and he said, okay.
And how did you do in that race? Because I remember you did well.
I did pretty well.
Yeah, I did pretty well.
So.
Yeah. Oh, I remember the United Airlines story, too.
Oh, man.
They sort of apologized.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And what's the other story?
Oh, the other story is this is just such funny stuff. I went off to Nationals down in Kentucky to do my first time trial. Okay. And I was so intimidated. It's like bike porn. So all these people have these fancy bikes. And I got down there and there were problems with my bikes and I had to get it all redone. So I get to the starting parking lot and getting ready to warm up. And it's already 87 degrees or something. And I'm changing into all my kit in the car with all these guys around me. So I'm frantically pulling it on. You know, I'm so nervous. I'm shaking. I get on my time trial bike and I'm warming up and I'm thinking, geez, these shorts feel really funny, you know, and I'm riding around. And I finally look down, and I have put them on backwards. So when you're riding with a team kit,
right,
the name of the team is across the butt.
Right, not in your case.
Not in my case. So I have the team name across the front, and I go, oh, dear, I wonder how many people. So now I got to get back into the car, all hot and sweaty. The car is now 115 degrees. And anyone who's tried to take off Lycra when they're soaking wet and sweaty and put it back on.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Did you do in that event?
I got sixth.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty,
for your first time trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like time trialing?
I do. It's the clock, honey. It's a sufferfest.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. It's a sufferfest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you watch the tour this year?
I did.
Were you pleased with the results?
I think the best man won.
And how about that little Nairo Quintana?
Oh, I know.
Isn't he awesome?
Oh, my gosh. Out of nowhere.
Out of Colombia, obviously, at 10,000 feet.
I know.
Obviously, a climber he is.
But he's amazing. His face never changes. He's just on that bike.
Right.
It's amazing.
Well, this has been fun. We never get to sit and talk anymore, and now we get to do it and share it with all our listeners. I hope you have great fun at the last two events. What's coming after the senior games? What's next?
I have a few more races locally, and then it's off to Nationals in Bend, Oregon.
And when is that?
September.
Yeah. And so. You'll be racing road?
Road, criterium, and time trial.
You're going to race all three?
All three, yeah.
What do you think about crit racing?
I love crit racing.
It's my favorite. Oh, it's my scariest.
Yeah. It's my favorite because it's such a chess game, and it's so cerebral, and it just, you have to, the maneuvering and the thinking and the plotting and the planning is just so entertaining.
Yeah, knowing you, you still play a music instrument,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
You play the violin?
Violin, mm-hmm, with the Solon Philharmonic. Yeah.
Wow. That's right. We used to call you the schedule queen.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad we got on your schedule today.
Well, thank you. And can I just say a few thank yous to people?
Absolutely. The microphone's yours.
Oh, that's great. Well, I just, you know, it takes a village. It really does take a village. We do not do this on our own. And there are some people who have been really central in helping me. And, of course, my family puts up with all this nonsense. Of course, Hubbub and you and Brian getting me on nice bikes and, you know, being so supportive has been wonderful.
Thanks.
And my coach, Brent Evans, who's been fabulous. And I'm on a wonderful team, Team Spin, Litzer Automation, and I've got great teammates, and the team is very, very supportive, which is really, really fun. It's really, really fun. So that's my thank you to all of you and for helping me along the way.
Well, we wish you so much luck, and whatever you do on the bike in the future, I think it's awesome, as long as you stay in the sport. We certainly don't want to lose you in any way, shape, or form.
You won't. I'm too in love with it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jane. Well, go home and get some rest so you can go ride your bike.
I will do that. Thanks,
Thanks
Diane.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jane Geist joined me here in the studio. As you heard, she is just a delightful person, and she is one hell of a rider. So I'm going to take a short break. We'll be right back with a little bit of news, and then we're going to head on out to Missoula, Montana to talk with Ginny Sullivan about Amtrak, and then over to New York City to talk with Cliff Cole, also about Amtrak. We'll be right back on The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
I'm Drew Brees. And being a dad means the world to me. And one of the most important things any parent can do is make sure their kids get active at least 60 minutes each day. Studies show that physical activity not only helps kids stay healthy, it can enhance important skills like concentration and problem solving, which can improve academic performance. This means physical activity can help your kids in the most important game of all, life. Learn more at fitness.gov.
Brought to you by HHS.
So when you get to the corner of Smith and Orchard, you're going to want to take a
you
left.
You are not going to
Then what you're
going to
do is turn onto Martin
Brett
Avenue.
Just broke up.
And go past
and
the first three lights
happy
and then
it.
Take the next left.
I don't really
then
think
drive
five
she's
more
happy,
blocks,
but
and you should be
who
there.
Who am I to judge, right?
Park
anyway,
on the right. That's
I'll
what
see
I
you
heard
later
last
tonight.
Night.
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I'm Diane Lees, and you're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Welcome back. And unfortunately, our first news item is a very sad one. Many here in Northeast Ohio might remember bike shop owner Sam Prawl. Sam's bike shop closed back in the 1980s, but Sam has been a very active triathlete and master swimmer. Last week, he was training for the senior games here, and he experienced some medical emergency and passed away while training in the pool. He was 61 years old. Our heartfelt thoughts go out to his family. He will be missed. So, unfortunately, I hate having to deliver this kind of news, but I also want people to remember Sam. He was such a cool guy. So one of the most frustrating and incredibly dangerous aspects to riding in traffic with cars is drivers who just don't see us on the road. Doesn't seem to matter what we wear, how many blinky lights we have, how loud our bells are. So someone has come up with a new type of horn for the bike. This is pretty cool. It has happened to many a cyclist. The car beside you suddenly cuts into your path or passes close enough for you to feel the heat of its exhaust on your leg. A big part of avoiding those close calls is being noticed, but for years, bicyclists-only defenses were bright clothing, battery-powered incandescent bulbs, and the cheery ching-ching of a traditional bicycle bell. But now that's changing. Thanks to improved LED lights, microchips, and smartphone technology, bicycles can have loud horns, brake lights, turn signals, and all manner of lighting. One gadget called Loud Bicycle can even make a bike honk like a car. Jonathan Lanzi, a bike commuter in the Boston area, said he yearned for an effective sound to warn drivers that he was in their blind spots. Traditional metal bells lack volume, he said, and yelling can make matters worse with aggressive drivers. So Mr. Lanzi came up with what is basically a car horn on a bike. It's about 6 inches across and attaches to the stern of the handlebar or one of the central bike frame tubes. The best part is that it has the two-tone sound of an oncoming sedan. It is speaking driver's language, Mr. Lanzi said. They just react right away. If you hear this horn, you're not going to think, I'll continue backing out of that driveway. Mr. Lancey raised more than $52,000 on Kickstarter, the social fundraising site, and hopes to be up and running in August. In the meantime, he is taking pre-orders, and the bell is under $100. Mr. Lancey's project is just one discussed in the article from the New York Times on July 25th. So every once in a while, it takes a sledgehammer to get me to figure out what people are saying, evidently. I've been corresponding on and off with a gentleman by the name of Ethan Seltzer, who lives in Richmond, Virginia. Ethan runs an organization called Energy Cycle, which I think is really a cool name. Originally called Pedal Power, Energy Cycle is a nonprofit organization that combines an indoor team cycling competition and energy demonstration to educate participants on self-sustaining activities to reduce our carbon footprint. It is committed to advancing an energy sustainability lifestyle through improved public awareness and education events. On their website, which is energycycle.org, it says it is committed to educating the community on the many alternatives available to consumers for our sustainability. Beyond events, Energy Cycle seeks to demonstrate simple steps we can all take to reduce energy consumption and have a positive impact on the environment. There are some great tips about how to reduce your carbon footprint. And if you're interested in producing an Energy Cycle event, you can probably contact Ethan. The website, again, is energycycle.org. So this comes from an online source called The Daily Bike on the blog Adventure Journal. It was posted by a Steve Casimiro. Megan Chinberg was racing in Liguria, Italy recently when she met this man and heard his unusual bike story. Quote, "This bike belonged to the gentleman in this photo when he was a lad. When the Nazis came through, they were stealing or destroying everything. So he built a fake wall in his parents' house and hid the bike there. Decades later, long after the house was sold, he remembered about the bike, went back, tore down the wall, and there was his childhood bike. And here it is now, restored and obviously cherished. It is impossible to verify, of course, but it is nice to believe. The bike that is shown in this blog at Adventure Journal, and then the entry again is The Daily Bike, is a beautiful green steel lug machine, has cottered crank, no derailleurs, and has big wing nuts on the wheels. Regardless of its origin, it's really a pretty bike. The 100th edition of the Tour de France, as we know, is officially in the books with a Froome Quintana Rodriguez 1-2-3 finish. And I thought the podium presentations on the Arc de Triomphe, under the Arc de Triomphe, were probably very cool, better in person. That said, the next big stage race is right here in the U.S. as 125 riders will shove off on August 20th in Colorado for the USA Cycling Pro Challenge. It is rumored that TDF Yellow Jersey winner Chris Froome might make an appearance, which would be very cool. Cool in that a U.S. event would attract the champion right after his three-week race across France. The Colorado event will feature a lead-up ride with distances from 30 to 108 miles in Fort Collins for amateurs and a 9K sprint the last day of the race in Denver. We will be talking with somebody from USA Cycling as we get closer to the start of the race. So this is kind of our big, you know, tour to U.S. I think it's pretty cool. This is one of my, I don't know if it's my favorite story, but it's pretty bizarre. In the nice try, Mr. Armstrong department, it seems that Lance thinks he has grounds for dismissal of the federal whistleblower suit. From the Wall Street Journal on July 23rd, Reed Albergati and Vanessa O'Connell posted this article. Lawyers for Lance Armstrong fired a scathing shot at the U.S. government on Tuesday, asking a federal judge to dismiss a $120 million whistleblower lawsuit that accused him and others of defrauding his former team's sponsor, the U.S. Postal Service. Mr. Armstrong, who was stripped of his 7 Tour de France titles last year, admitted in January that he used performance-enhancing drugs to win races. He has since lost all of his major sponsorship deals and is banned for life from competition. The lawsuit, filed in 2010 by Mr. Armstrong's former teammate, Floyd Landis, alleged that Mr. Armstrong and others defrauded the government when they took sponsorship dollars from the Postal Service with the understanding that there would be no use of performance-enhancing drugs on the team. But Mr. Armstrong, in a 25-page rebuke of the allegations, said the Postal Service should have known he was doping.
Allegations that he had used performance-enhancing drugs have received news coverage, but the officials, quote-unquote, did nothing, the filing says. Armstrong was denying his use of performance-enhancing drugs during this period, of course. Instead, the Postal Service renewed the sponsorship agreement. Mr. Armstrong's lawyers, John Kecker and Elliot Peters of Kecker and Van Nest LLP, wrote, and, quote, basked in the favorable publicity of its sponsorship, unquote. The U.S. Postal Service began its sponsorship in October of 95 and extended it until the year end of 2004. Mr. Armstrong's lawyers highlighted the benefits the Postal Service got from the team contract, which included access to, quote, a private hospitality tent, unquote, on the Champs-Élysées, private team receptions, including exclusive dinners in Paris and invitations to the final night dinner after the 21-day race ended in Paris. Under the Federal False Claims Act, citizens can sue for alleged fraud against the government, as Mr. Landis did in this case, and receive a reward of as much as one-third of any money recovered by the government. So the article goes on to explain how when the suit was first disclosed, who else was involved in it, and all of that. But it's sort of like, so they're saying the Postal Service benefited to the tune of $120 million. Yeah, I don't think so. Somehow that just doesn't work for me. So at the very bottom, it says, if found to have violated the False Claims Act, Mr. Armstrong and others named in the suit would be liable for as much as triple the amount of the sponsorship, which was roughly $40 million between 95 and 2004, the years in which the Postal Service sponsored the team. Mr. Armstrong's lawyers argued in their motion Tuesday that Mr. Landis's suit was filed too late, just past the six-year statute of limitations. It is now far too late for the government to revisit its choice to reap the benefits of sponsorship rather than investigate allegations of doping. A spokeswoman for the United States Postal Service declined to comment. You think? I think that's probably a good idea. This comes from the LAB, without much of a surprise, I might add. Last year, Congress passed a new transportation bill, MAP 21, that dismantled dedicated funding for biking and walking by combining transportation enhancements, safe routes to school, and recreational trails into one, and cutting funding by 30%. The saving grace was that the bill included a local control provision to ensure that mayors and communities could access these dollars to support local transportation priorities. Now, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky wants to wipe out what's left. Senator Paul has introduced an amendment to the Transportation Appropriations Bill to prohibit any money from being used for transportation alternatives and to redirect that money towards bridge repair. The LAB states that while we agree that repairing our bridges is important both for safety and economic development reasons, so are our local economies. Dedicating the small amount of transportation alternatives funding to bridge repair couldn't fix our country's bridges in 50 years. And taking that small amount of funding away would dangerously undermine efforts in our cities, towns, and counties to provide safe and efficient transportation options for everyone. With rates of bicycling and walking fatalities on the rise, that is a trade we can't afford to make. The phenom of this year's Tour de France was the unassuming world-class climber Nairo Quintana. At 23, he's truly atop the world's highest mountain with two winners' jerseys, the white for best young rider under the age of 25 and the polka dot for his accumulation of the most points in the mountains, as well as second place overall in the world's most difficult cycling race. So if you want to know more about him, there's really a nice article online in cyclinginquisition.com from Saturday, July 20th. Okay, this comes from our friend and resident physician advisor, Dr. Gabe Merkin, and I thought it was interesting because if you're over 40, you might be experiencing a little belly fat. So it says, watch out for abdominal obesity. People who store fat primarily in their bellies usually have lots of plaques in their arteries and are at very high risk for heart attacks. This comes from the Journal of the American Medical Association from July 17th of this year. They are also at high risk for diabetes and almost always suffer from metabolic syndrome. Having a big belly and big buttocks is better than having a big belly and small buttocks. Who would have known that? Storing fat primarily in your belly means that you have high insulin blood levels. because insulin specifically causes fat to be deposited in your belly rather than being distributed more evenly throughout your body. You have high insulin levels because your cells are not responding normally to insulin and your blood sugar levels are too high. As your blood sugar levels continue to rise, your pancreas puts out more insulin, and high blood sugar levels damage every cell in your body. If you have a big belly and a little butt, you should immediately check with your doctor and try to lower blood sugar levels by exercising regularly, taking sugar drinks only during exercise lasting more than an hour, avoiding sugar-added foods except during exercise, avoiding red meat because it blocks insulin receptors, avoiding fried foods, and eating lots of fruit and vegetables. So turn around and take a look. Big butt, big belly, not so bad. Big belly, little butt, uh-oh. So finally, my crazy video of the week was posted to Bike Radar by Sam Dancy on July 22nd. Mountain bikes in the Tour de France rarely mix, but on the final climb to Annecy-Semnoz on Saturday, they were spotted in the same frame as local downhill rider Romain Marandet set up a dirt jump and launched himself over Chris Froome, Nairo Quintana, and Joaquin Rodriguez, our 1-2-3 finishers at the Tour. So you can go to, again, Bike Radar, type in Sam Dancy, look for July 22nd if you want to see. It's a very short video, and this guy literally jumps over the Peloton. So that's my news for today. We're going to head on out to Missoula, Montana, and talk first with Ginny Sullivan at Adventure Cycling, and then we're going to head to New York City and talk to Cliff Cole. That whole conversation is going to be about bicycles and Amtrak. Ginny, thanks for joining me on the Outspoken Cyclists this evening.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. So back in late June, I reported on an article by Angie Schmidt from Streets Blog about a letter written to Amtrak President Joseph Boardman. She was requesting, or somebody was requesting, better facilities for bikes on trains. So this week in a guest blog that you did on the LAB site, there's an update on what's transpired since then. So maybe a better question is, why is Adventure Cycling involved in the bike train issue?
So that's a great question. Our mission is to inspire and empower people to travel by bicycle. It's really who we are and what we do is people taking their vacations via a bicycle, whether they bike somewhere across the country or they take their bikes with them and do a bicycle vacation. But that's really our market, and those are the people that we serve. And one of our strategic goals is to make bicycle travel more accessible and to integrate bicycle accommodations into our existing transportation systems. So that's working with the trains, working with airlines to make it so it's more, the fees for packing your bike on an airplane are seem more reasonable, bus service and even transit. Historically, our members, and we have about 46,000 members worldwide, that always gets me, have commented to us how easy it is to travel by train and bike in Europe.
Right.
But how extremely difficult it is here in the U.S. And with the boom in the adventure travel market, and part of that boom is attributed to the bicycling industry and bike travel, it's just growing by leaps and bounds, and it's worldwide epic. You know, like Europe has tracked $57 billion annually in economic boost from bicycle tourism.
Wow.
Wisconsin has documented 533 million annually from out-of-state cyclists visiting their states. So there are some really good indicators that things are booming in the bike travel market, including our map sales at Adventure Cycling, our tours, and our membership. So as more and more states and cities and people start taking to bikes to commute, to recreate, to vacation, it seems appropriate that we start making these accommodations for that request and those needs. And that's really why we want to see gain some traction with Amtrak, is because we're really feeling that need.
Now, let me back up a second, and I do absolutely want to talk about the trains, because that's what this particular segment's about. But you mentioned the airline travel and how costly, and it has been very costly, mm-hmm. for people to take their bikes, whether they're going on a triathlon, whether they're going cross-country to start a tour.
Has there been any progress with the airlines? And then we'll get back to the trains. It just never occurred to me that that was something else you were working on.
Yeah, no, we, you know, it, right now we're stuck really with Frontier being the only airline that has a real reasonable fee scale for bringing your bike on to a plane. And so what we've started to do is really just track and see if there's any consistency across airlines or even across airports as far as what people are being charged. And it can range anywhere from $100 one way to $300-$400 one way. And it seems to be all over the place, whether, you know, it's Delta or United or some other airline. It doesn't seem, we're still kind of tracking all of that. And then our approach is to just try to show them how well it works for Frontier and use this kind of same approach that we're using with Amtrak.
Sure.
To weld our way into the airline industry. You know, because people can bring their golf clubs and
right.
can bring their skis.
Sure.
And they just pay that $50 baggage fee. But it's all over the place with bikes.
Well, and I think that's something that in another segment I'd really like to pursue, to find out how maybe the whole bicycle community can sort of put pressure on the airlines to either come up with something that makes sense. I mean, we need to travel with our bikes. So let's get back to Amtrak for a moment.
Yeah.
Can you give me some sort of an estimate about how many people might use Amtrak and take their bikes if there were better accommodations?
Boy, that is a really tough question, and it's interesting. You really have to kind of break it down into segments. So we were looking at some results of a survey that the Great Allegheny Passage, CNO Canal Towpath, the Trail Towns program did
right.
for that area, and they surveyed 1,300 people, and from that they had 99% said that they would use bicycle service if it was supplied on Amtrak. I mean, and that, I think, you know, the Great Allegheny Passage and CNO Canal, they've been real instigators in a lot of this work. They were one of the first trails to really document economic impact along their route. They've been really good at building support from communities, and now they're really making an impact with Amtrak as well, because there's just so much desire. And then if you really think about it, they're right, you know, they're right outside of the Beltway, where a lot of the you know, our politicians all are looking to do outside activities, and so that carries a lot of weight. So while I can't answer exactly how many people would be using Amtrak if they provide the services, I know it would be a huge boon for our cycling community, and it would just really ramp up the opportunities for people to get out and explore this country by bike.
So given your blog post of this week, and that there was this big press conference, and Senator Schumann and a bunch of the New York people, and so New York is really on it and wants to see this happen. Have there been some breakthroughs? What's changed since maybe Angie's blog back in June?
Well, not only has New York been really on it, but Vermont. Nancy from the Bike Ped Coalition in Vermont, Josh from New York Bicycle Coalition, the League of Michigan Bicyclists have been really working hard with their passenger association. Of course, California has been all over this for several years, Washington State as well. Those states really seem to be making an impact. And one thing you really have to understand about Amtrak is it's a difficult nut to crack, because Amtrak is managed differently for each state. So not only is each line managed a little differently, but they receive federal funding, yes, but each the way it's managed at the state level might be a combination of the State Department of Transportation. It might be a local rail authority that's separate from the Department of Transportation. We compare it to, here at Adventure Cycling, we compare it to working with our national parks. Each national park has its superintendent that's in charge of all the policies and, you know, all of the actions that happen within the boundaries of the park. And while it has management at the national level, they don't interfere with the local superintendent and their staff's local decision-making process for the most part. And that is how Amtrak is as well. You have to come to understand the players for each line and how the state manages Amtrak. And then throw in that additional complication of freight taking priority over passenger trains, and it just kind of makes everything real complicated. So it's not an easy thing to make an impact with Amtrak, because you really have to get to know the Amtrak managers, and they're really hard to get to know. It's hard to find the right people to talk to. You mentioned earlier that you're going to talk to someone from Amtrak. It's just really hard to find someone to talk to there, and it's just because they're really broken up in how they manage this.
Well, it's going to be interesting to talk with this gentleman. He's out of New York City, so I don't know if he's speaking for Amtrak nationally. Or it was interesting when I went to contact them. You know, what you see on the Amtrak site are all these individual areas of the country. So there is no real central place like Washington, D.C. I would have expected maybe something out of D.C., and that was the number I originally called, but evidently they referred it to somebody in New York. So I will be talking to him, and we'll see what he has to say about these same questions, and I think we're going to keep following this up.
Yeah, and I think that they did the test runs in New York and Vermont on the Ethan Allen lines, and I think that those will be really great to watch and see how enthusiastic both the cycling community, the rail line associations, and how well it worked for the conductors and the train staff as well. And I think, you know, if we can make some good test runs like Vermont and New York just recently did within the last week, we're going to start seeing some major progress. One of the things Adventure Cycling is trying to do is work with Amtrak by forming like a bicycle technical advisory committee that can help make short-term and long-term goals that are both feasible and affordable for Amtrak to do. And, you know, they're starting to design cars in New York State that will accommodate bicycles. And while it'll take a while for those cars to get out and be used, it is progress. And that's what we all have to keep in mind.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me this afternoon, and we will keep, you know, on this story. We'll see what the gentleman from Amtrak has to say, and we'll get back to you.
All right.
Thanks so much, Ginny. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
All righty. Bye-bye. Ginny Sullivan joined me from her offices at Adventure Cycling in Missoula, Montana, to talk about Amtrak and trains. Now we're going to get the Amtrak take on bringing bikes on the trains from Cliff Cole, the communications director in New York City. Cliff, thank you for joining me on the show this evening.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So recently we reported on a story about how some Amtrak lines are able or not able to accommodate bicycles on trains. And then this week there was a blog from Ginny Sullivan from Adventure Cycling in Missoula explaining that there may be some new things happening that will make it easier to travel with bikes on Amtrak. What can you tell me about that?
Well, what we can tell you right now is that Amtrak, working with some of the local elected officials in Vermont, in the state of New York, have been and continuing to undergo a bicycle demonstration, which is that what that means is along certain routes in Vermont and New York State, we've retrofitted some of the cafe cars on board some of the trains and have some pre-selected groups and some folks that have signed up to bring their bicycles on board these trains just to see, you know, what their feedback would be, how it goes, how it fits into the cafe car, and actually just to get their feedback on how the entire demonstration went. So as I said, we've been doing that now for the last couple of weeks, and that's going to continue until the end of July, and then we'll evaluate the feedback and talk to our state partners to see if, in fact, we can move this forward.
I know it's only been a couple of weeks, but can you gauge already if there's an interest from cycling people?
Well, we know there's an interest.
I mean,
we know that. We've heard, Amtrak's heard that, and we, you know, recognize that there is an interest in that. And as I said, Senator Chuck Schumer and Senator Little from New York State have been pushing for these initiatives and these bicycle demonstrations and these bicycles to be able to be carried along Amtrak in New York State. So, yeah, I mean, we know that there's a need. We know that where we do offer it, people do use the service. The issue that Amtrak has is the availability of equipment and retrofitting that equipment to make it both feasible for getting bicycles on and off the train, but at the same time, affording room for the rest of the passengers.
When we talk about a cafe car, what is that exactly? Are we talking about a place where we usually eat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The dining cars.
Is available. It's available on some of our lines. So
okay.
We actually retrofitted, I'm not sure how many cars, but at least one of them that had actually four bicycle racks put on board the retrofitted cafe car, and we had this pre-selected group in different locations where they would get on at different stops and have the bicycle loaded on, put it onto the rack, secure it, and then when they were getting off, process would be reversed. So the cafe car, we're not sure actually if that's where when we move forward with this procedure, if that's where it's going to wind up, but that was a good starting point. We thought that was a good place to do it. What we did was we took a piece of equipment and we retrofitted it with the bike racks, but it wasn't a revenue car. What that means is there were not passengers going through while the bikes were on there. This was a special car just for the demonstrations that we're using, just to see how feasible it is to do that.
Well, I know that I've taken a train cross-country. I got on in Chicago and went out to Portland, and it was really fun, by the way. Mm-hmm. We really enjoyed ourselves. And I know with us were a bunch of people from Philly who were going out to a bike show in Portland. And so they had a whole lot of bikes that were boxed and brought on as luggage. This
right.
doesn't sound like that's the same thing.
No. There are certain areas along the Amtrak route where we do permit bicycles to be carried on, some on the West Coast, some in Illinois, some in Maine, and one in North Carolina. So moving forward with this again, if this demonstration is successful and we actually are able to do it, then that's what we're looking for more, rather than having the bicycle equipment packed on as luggage, being able to carry on and carry off. But again, the routes that we're looking at now on the East Coast, the initiatives would have to be done with the cooperation and the financing of our state partners. So they've expressed, you know, interest in moving the demonstration forward. So once that's done, everybody will sit down and talk and see how we can move it forward.
You're kind of touching on my next topic, which is about, Ginny alluded to the fact that each Amtrak line, and I think there are eight of them, is somewhat independent of the other. So would each line have to sort of run one of these demonstrations before going forward, or would demonstrations on the East Coast prove to perhaps somebody on the West Coast that this is something that the entire Amtrak system might want to do?
Well, I think Amtrak as a company is moving forward towards, you know, getting bicycles and allowing them onto the trains, but you know, it's a gradual process. And again, unlike the commuter agencies, we're not typically equipped on all the lines to have this done. So again, it's a financial issue for us to be able to make the equipment available for the bicycle rack. So to answer your question, is if we do it as a company, there's certain lines that are supported by the state, so they would have to step forward and say, yes, we would want that project, or we would want that to be implemented, and then work with Amtrak to finance that project. So not in every case can Amtrak, you know, just step forward and say, tomorrow we want bicycles on it, and
right.
do it, because we don't have the, you know, financial capability to do that. So, you know, we do offer in certain cases. We are running this bicycle demonstration because we recognize that people want it, and hopefully after it's done, we'll find a way to get it done.
That would be awesome. So is there anything we in the cycling community can do to continue, not to push Amtrak, but to encourage Amtrak to keep pursuing this as a group?
Sure. I mean, the Amtrak is always interested in what the public has to say about their service, whether it's train travel, onboard services, food, and this certainly falls in the category of an amenity. So Amtrak has made its way significantly into the social media world. We do have a Twitter account. We do have a Facebook page. So we welcome comments from people who are looking for us to improve on what we have, enhance what we have, and make what we have better. So my best advice would be to, you know, to get onto the social media sites and just let us know that this is something that either one that you enjoy having if you're in one of the areas where we offer that service, or if you're in an area where we don't offer it and you'd like to see it happen, let us know. And the more people that say they want it to happen, it can't hurt. But like I said, I mean, I don't want to sound like a broken record. This initiative on the East Coast, it moves forward, has to be done with the coordination and the finance from the state partners. So, and they've been very cooperative in the bicycle demonstration, but to move it forward to the next level, and then that's an entirely different discussion. But
sure.
We're very pleased that, you know, we were able to do this, and so far, you know, from what I'm hearing, little snippets that we're getting, I don't get a lot of news, but so far it seems like the demonstrations are going well. But part of what we're doing is getting feedback from the people who are participating in the demonstrations. So when we're done, we'll know better to go to, you know, the folks that can actually help us move it to the next step and say, let's do it.
Well, I think it's great, and I like train travel. It's sort of a, to me, it's a classy way to go. You know, you don't feel like cattle in it like you do these days, running through these airport security things and jumping on, you know, little tiny planes with little tiny seats.
Right.
So you do have a great website, Amtrak.com. There is a page called bring-your-bicycle-onboard, and onboard is all one word. What is the Twitter account?
The Twitter account is at Amtrak.
Okay.
So if you're familiar with Twitter,
we are.
You just log into it and just type Amtrak into your search engine, and our page pops up.
Well, Cliff, thanks so much for talking to me. I know I'm catching you on the last day of the week, and I hope you have a great weekend. I hope the weather stays good in New York, and we'll keep looking for trains and bikes.
That's right.
All right.
Thanks for letting us bring this out to everyone, and, you know, we'll keep everyone posted on how the demonstrations went.
So appreciate it. Keep up the good stuff, because we like bikes and trains.
Okay.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cliff Cole joined me from his offices in New York City with Amtrak. So we've talked a lot about bikes and trains today. Now we could talk about planes and boats, and there's probably a song in there somewhere. So that's my show for this evening. Good luck to all the senior athletes. Go, Jane, when you have your road races this weekend. I hope the seniors have enjoyed being here in Cleveland. We've probably shown them a pretty good time, except for a little bit of rain. I hope everyone listening has a great week and can get out for a ride. Don't forget, we're on Facebook at Outspoken Cyclist. Join the conversation. Start a new one. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at wjcu.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at wjcu.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.